tonight's shiur on Parshas Noach. It's a story told of the Hasidim of Mordechai Mitchinob Chernobyl, Zuchuto Yagen Alein. They used to go to the town where Mordechai was the Rebbe every now and then to be with him and to bask in his light of his Ruchnias. And they used to have a Jewish wagon driver who used to take them regularly. But he never used to go into the Rebbe himself. He only brought the Hasidim. Every now and then they would try to convince the wagon driver, you know, why don't you go in to the Rebbe and speak to him and get a bracha, whatever. So he used to say, nah, what is the Rebbe going to do? What can he do already? You know, my life's a very simple life. Difficulty in Parnassa. What's the Rebbe going to do? However, once, after being pushed, he finally agreed and he went into the Rebbe. He was in for quite a while, but when he left, nobody said anything to him. It was just on the way home when they were taking the Hasidim home, and each of the Hasidim was saying what they gained during their stay. But the Rebbe, the wagon driver, said, you know, I had an aliyah more than all of you guys. So they said, really? Why? What happened? So he said, well, I went into the Rebbe, and the Rebbe asked me, what's my Seder Hayom? You know, what do I do during the day? So I told him that it depends if I have work that day or if it's a day that I'm not working. So he says, so what do you do if in the day you're not working? He says, well, then I get up, I go to the minyan, daven with the minyan. Afterwards, I stay for a shiur in Mishnayos. Afterwards, I sit in the base midrash, say some tehillim. Then I go home, have a little bit of breakfast, rest a little bit. In the afternoon, I go early to mincha. I hear a shiur in Ein Yaakov. After that's mincha, and then marv, and that's how the day goes by. He says, very nice. He says, and what about a day that you have work? Then what's your schedule like? So the wagon driver told the Rebbe, well, then it's a whole different story. I have to get up very early to oil the wheels on my wagon because, you know, I don't want something to happen, Halila, you know, while I'm taking my passengers. And afterwards, it's about 6:30 in the morning. I go to either the marketplace or the house of the person that booked me to take them. And on the way, if I have a chance, I'll pull over to the side and quickly put on my tefillin and say Kriyat Shema, and then quickly take off my tefillin as if I have a chance. And most of the time I don't, and I end up just later on in the day, when I get to the city, I then daven. So the Rebbe asked me, he said, I don't understand, why don't you just get up normally, daven in a minyan, and only afterwards go to the shuk to try to get some clients? So, around 7:30, 8, whatever, after davening. And he said, no, Rebbe, he says, I can't do that. He says, why not? He says, because, at that time in the day already, it's late. I'm not going to, what clients am I going to find? What's going to be with my parnassa? So the Rebbe said, let me tell you the following little story. He said, there was a wagon driver like yourself that worked very hard for his parnassa, and he saved everything he made, and he used to carry it on him. He had the gold coins, he had silver coins, he had some cheap the brass coins, a whole bunch of them, and he used to keep it on him. Anyways, one time he was traveling and he got caught before Shabbos in a certain place that he had, thought he would be able to get home, but he didn't. And he was stuck in a certain town, and he needed to make Shabbos. So he asked, where does the Rav live? So they pointed, so he quickly went to the Rav's house, and he said, would the Rav be able to put me up for Shabbos? I'm stuck here. So Rav said, sir, my pleasure, certainly. And he gave him a nice room, whatever. So he got himself ready for Shabbos. And then, just before he was ready to go to shul, he realized that he had all this money, which is of course muktza, and he didn't want to leave the money lying around. That's his like life savings, you know, that he had on him. So he was thinking, what should I do? So he quickly, you know, ran after the Rav, who'd already left for shul, and he says, "Oh, Rabbi, please, I want you to do me a favor. I have this money, all my money. I don't know what to do with it." She says, "No problem. I'll put it away for you." So he went back home, and he took the wagon driver's money, put it away for him, and they went off to shul. So as they're davening, you know, Kabbalah Shabbos, whatever, the wagon driver all of a sudden, it hits him. He goes, "What did I do?" He says, "What a fool! He says, my life savings, I just handed it over to this rabbi I never saw before in my life. I don't know who he is. I didn't even get a little receipt that I gave him the money, and there's no witnesses, and that's it. All he has to do is say, 'You never gave me the money,' and that's it." He goes, "Oh no, what did I do?" And he was beside himself. He couldn't dove and he couldn't concentrate. He says, "What am I going to do?" And nothing to do about it now. It's Shabbos, you know. So they came home from shul, and they sat at the Shabbos table, or made kiddush, whatever, and they served the soup, and he couldn't eat. He couldn't eat. He had no appetite. And they served him this and that. He goes, "No, sorry, I just can't eat." He goes, "What's wrong? You would like something else? You don't like the food?" He goes, no, it's not the food." He said, "Here, you want something maybe milchik, you know, we'll give you." He says, no, it's okay. He says, I really don't feel well." So all he was thinking about was the money. What's going to be with this money? It's going to be his money. Anyway, so you can imagine, his whole Shabbos was shot, you know, the next day, the davening, the food, again, the meal, he couldn't eat. He was just waiting for Motzei Shabbos, so he can hopefully, you know, get his hands on his money. Finally, you know, they're about to go tomorrow, he goes, my money, can I have my... He goes, "Wait," the Rav said, we have to go daven. Money. So he went to daven, they came home, he goes, "Oh, can I have my money? The Rav says, "We have to make Havdalah. What are you rushing? Havdalah." He goes, "Okay, fine, make Havdalah, please." So he makes an Havdalah. He goes, my money, can I have my money?" So the Rav says, okay, I'll give you your money, take it, relax. So he goes, and he brings out his first bag of the gold coins. So he dumps it on the table, he starts counting. He counts, goes, Hashem, they're all there. And then the Rav brings the next bag with the silver coins. He counts one, two, three, four, five, six. Baruch Hashem, they're all there, silver coins. And then came like the pennies, you know, the brass coins, a bunch of pennies. So he gives them the last bag of pennies, and he turns it over, he starts counting one, two. The Rav says, "Oh, okay, that is enough." He says, "What?" He says, "Come on. I gave you the gold coin. You saw I didn't take one gold coin from you. And then it comes a silver coin. And you saw I didn't take a silver coin. I didn't take gold. I'm going to take the pennies. If I didn't take gold and the silver, why'd I take the pennies?" So the Rav, the Rebbe, the Raggedy Driver relating the story, said, "This is what the Rebbe told me. I told him about my day, and I asked him, I said, he told me to go daven first, and I said, I can't, what's going to be with my parnasa?" So the Rebbe said, "Listen," he says, "HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes your neshama when you go to sleep at night, right? And then what happens? In the morning, he gives it back, because that's like the gold coins, right? That's your neshama, I mean, that's your life. And Hashem gives it back to you, as we say, Shechazarta bi nishmasi bechem, like gives us, you know, in mercy, he gives us back our neshama. That's the gold. He gives us our gold. We're alive again. And not only that, we open up our eyes, and we're able to walk, and our hands can move, and we're able to function. That's like the silver coins." So he says, "Tell me something. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you the gold, and he gives you the silver, he gives you the neshama, he gives you your health, you can walk, you can talk, whatever. But so he's not going to give you the penny, he's not going to give you the parnasa?" So he said, turned to his, the Hasidim, he said, "Now tell me, wasn't I right when I told you that I had an aliyah greater than all of you guys during this visit?" Okay. Now to some shilas. There was once a fellow that he lived quite a distance from his shul, which of course was not a problem during the week. You drive to shul. But on Shabbos, it was, you know, a little bit difficult. It was quite a long walk. So what he did was, like many people do in this situation, he would take his car on Erev Shabbos to shul, you know, for mincha. He'd leave his car parked by the shul. And Motzei Shabbos, He would drive back home, take the car back home. At least he saves himself two trips, you know, on the way there and Motzei Shabbos. Fine. So what's the problem? The problem is the following, that his house where he lived was right across from a mall and a restaurants, and that's where he lived. And he had a parking space, his own private parking space in front of his house. So normally, you know, he was parked there, but on Shabbos, he was not parked there because he would park in shul. So what happened was the people, the non-religious people, they would go to the mall on Shabbos, Rachman Litzlan, so they needed a place to park their cars. So they said, oh, here's a parking space, and they park in my thing. I guess, okay, normally I have no problem, I'm not parked there, I don't mind somebody using my parking spot. But the question is, what should I do? Should I allow these Mechalei Shabbos to park in my parking spot? On the one hand, you know, maybe I should lock it up, because these are, you know, Mechalei Shabbos, and why should I let them, you know, use my parking space on Shabbos, to park their car on Shabbos? On the other hand, maybe I'm not doing anything wrong. What they do, they do. I mean, I'm not doing anything. I'm not Mechalei Shabbos myself. I'm just leaving my parking space open, right? And not only that, he said, I was thinking maybe there's even a side to say that I should dafka leave it open. Why? Because this person that parked there, if he wouldn't have a place to park, he may be like doing hakafas, you know, and circling around and driving even more. At least, okay, fine, he's parked there and that's that. Otherwise, maybe he has to drive even more to try to find a parking space. So that was that's the shaila. So the answer that he was given was, mitzad the dinei Shabbos, he's right. He's not. He can leave his parking space open, and he's not doing anything wrong. He's leaving it open. What they do. Okay, that's ikar hadin as far as Shabbos goes. However, hashkafically says it's improper to leave it open. And he should close up the parking spot and not allow other people to use it. Why? Because by leaving it open, it's as if she's showing that I don't care, it doesn't bother me that people, you know, Mechalei Shabbos, I let them park in my spot. He said, gives a mashal, in other words. He says, imagine, let's say not on Shabbos, right? You have a parking space, and a guy comes in his car and he says, hey, can I park in your parking space? And by the way, your father's a gunav, and he's a cheat and a thief and a gangster. He starts cursing out your father as he's asking to park in your parking space. Would you let him park in your parking space? He said, no, why? What's wrong? Your parking space is empty. How can you let a guy like that who's cursing out your father let you park in your parking space? Forget it. Right? So to here, this person that's cursing out Hashem, you know, so to speak, by being Mechalei Shabbos Farhesia, and what do you say? Yeah, okay, fine, you can use my parking space. It doesn't go. So shkafically, it's not the right thing. And he says, but what about the Taina, that they're going to be circling around and drive even more if they're not able to park there? So he says that, okay, it's maybe true, but still, since you're doing what you're supposed to do by locking up your parking space because to show that you're not happy with Chilul Shabbos, you're doing it. If they decide to drive, then that's what was saying, Haliteu l'Rasha v'Yamus. You know, it's like the Rasha do what he does and let him die. It's his fault. He shouldn't be doing what he's doing. You have to do what you have to do. And if he, Becholza, wants to drive around, then good, that's his business. That's something he shouldn't do, and he's going to have to pay for it. It's nothing to do with you. You have to do what's incumbent upon you. There was a Maisa with a Yid that he had a certain problem that he was worried about what was going to happen to him, his family, whatever. He's very nervous about it, certain Sarah. And he went to his Rav and asked him, Rebbe, maybe you can give me some advice, some maybe a school or whatever that can push off this thing, this Sarah that I'm really worried about might happen to my family. So the Rav said, okay, I can give you some advice. He opened up the Rabbeinu Bechai on Parshas Mishpatim. And he showed him, Rabbeinu Bechai, he brings down the pasuk in Mishlei. It says, Matan b'seiser yichpe'af. That if a person gives staka, says Shlomo Melech, b'seiser, matan b'seiser, with people not knowing about it, so that's yichpe'af. That can take care of a lot of problems and peronius that shouldn't happen. As long as it's done in secret. Giving people, meaning anonymously, you give a staka, people don't know that you're who's the one that gave them. So that's a big schus to push off peronius. So the Rav suggested to this man, why don't you try that, you know, give out stock or whatever, but in an anonymous manner. Okay. So he agreed to do so. However, he had an interesting shaila. He says, what about my wife? Can I include my wife in this project? Or maybe not, because once I tell my wife about it, it's not Matan B'Seser anymore. Because now it's not just me. Now somebody else knows about it. It's not B'Seser. Or maybe not. You know. In other words, I could use my wife could help writing checks or giving out tzedakah or whatever. She can help me in this project. But then again, it's not really B'Seser anymore. So that was the question. So the answer was that it's not a problem to have your wife join in the project. Why? Because that's not called that another person knows. You're giving the tzedakah. As we have a klal, the ishto kagufo. So since the wife is like the person himself, ishto kagufo, it's fine. It's not she's included, and the thing is not like somebody else knows. Nobody else knows because you and your wife are like one. So bring a nice raya proof to this. So Gemara and Ksubas, daf samach zayin, about Mar Ukba. Mar Ukba had a neighbor who was very poor, and he wanted to help him out. But again, he wanted to help him out with a matan b'seiser. So every morning, every single morning, he would get up early, and he would quietly put four zuzim in the by the door of this ani, so that every morning he would have some money for the day. He used to do it day after day. Of course, the ani was very curious to know who's the one that's putting his money by his door, but he didn't know because it was matan b'seiser. So one day, Mar Ukba and his wife were going to buy this ani's door to put down the money, and all of a sudden, happened to be the ani opened the door and he sees these two figures, you know, by his door. So he was very curious, finally, to be able to find out who are these people. But as soon as they realized that, you know, the ani was coming, they quickly ran away. But he kept chasing after them. You know, he wanted to know, wait, who are you? You know, he's running. And Morris says that they were cornered. They couldn't get away. The only way, the only place they found to hide was in a furnace. So they jumped in the furnace in order not to give up their identity. And a nace happened, and they were saved, and they weren't burnt. However, the Gemara relates that his wife came out unscathed. However, Mar Ukba himself, the bottoms of his feet were a little bit scalded. So he asked, you know, okay, there's a big nace happened to both, but Mar Ukba asked, well, why? Asked his wife, how come you were saved completely, and I was burnt a little bit. What's chus do you have that you weren't burnt at all? So she said, because the tzedakah that I do for the anim usually is greater than your tzedakah. Because what do I give the anim? I give them food. So that's instant hana. Give them something, immediately eat it. Whereas what do? You give them money. Money, so I have to take it, go to the store, buy the food, prepare it, whatever. I give them the food already prepared. Instant hana. So therefore, my schus is even greater than you, and therefore I wasn't burnt at all. Okay. So, and the Gemara. So he says, as a question, he says, we see Mar Ukba was so makpid that he didn't want the ani to find out his identity, who he was, who was giving the money, who wanted to be matan b'seiser. So he asked, how can he go with his wife? He said he went with his wife and they ran away. And what was his wife doing there? You see, he wanted to get a kach. He didn't want the ani to see him. He ran away, whatever. He was so careful, matan b'seiser, but his wife knew that he was giving it. So answers the Meir. He says, "Mar Ukba holich ishto imo mipnei shechashavo kegufo." Says the Meir exactly like we said, that Marukma wasn't worried about that. It's still called Matan Beseser because he ishto kagufo, and therefore it didn't matter that his wife was with him. That's still considered Matan Beseser. It's a beautiful raya. Rings here that comes an interesting halacha also comes up from ishto kagufo. There's a well-known Chafetz Chaim, the Sefer Chafetz Chaim Lashon Hara, where he writes in Klal Ches that a person should realize that Dash ain't shum chiluk beisur sipur Lashon Hara beinim hu misaper lanashim mecharim or liishta. Chafetz Chaim himself says there's no difference whether you say Lashon Hara to some person or to your wife. He says, and many people are mess up in this, that they tell their wives all types of things that happen in the Beis Medrash or in the market. Oh, you know, this guy did to me today. I was sitting in the shul, and he said this to me, and this guy did that to me, and said this to me, or whatever. And he says, besides the Yisr of Lashon Hara, he's also Marbe Machloikis. Why? Because certainly, he says, his wife's going to be upset at that guy that he's hurt his her husband or whatever, and when she hears about it. And she's going to have hatred towards him and maybe even take revenge against him or whatever and start a whole big fight. And machloikas lead to all types of bad things. Therefore, he says, it's Yisr Lashon Hara to dislike your wife to like anybody else. Okay, that's the Ad Kan what the Chafetz Chaim says. However, it's said in the name of the Chazon Ish that there are situations when a person could say Lashon Hara to his wife. Why? Based on this heter of Ishto Kagufo, that it's like saying Lashon Hara to yourself, because Ishto Kagufo. And he said that is if his kavana is not to create scene or whatever, like he wants, oh, you know, I don't like this guy, and he wants his wife also to not like him, when that's not the case. He says, Eli Fruk Es Asher Alibo. He just wants to get off his chest. Something's bothering him. He has to vent out this anger that happened, you know, to him today, who was against this guy, whatever. So just a vent, that's all. Not in any way that he wants to create Sina. And he also adds, and if it's clear to him that his wife will not tell the Lashon Hara to anybody else, it must end there. So then, since Yishto Kagufo, the Chazon Ish, they say in the name of Chazon Ish, there's a heter there as well to speak Lashon Hara, else using the heter of Yishto Kagufo. Here's an interesting shaila. There's once a worker in a goy, a Gentile worker who was used to work cleaning the yeshiva, certain yeshiva. So one day he goes to the Rosh Yeshiva, whatever, and he says, "Today," the goy tells the Rosh Yeshiva, "today I did a big mitzvah." So the Rosh Yeshiva says, "What do you mean? What mitzvah did?" He says, "Well," he says, "I was cleaning one of the dorm rooms, and I saw a mezuzah, you know, what you have on your doors. I found on the floor, it fell off, and I said, 'Oh!' And I picked up the mezuzah and I kissed it twice, and I refastened it onto the door. I did a big mitzvah." So the Rosh Yeshiva says, "Oh," he says, "you put up a mezuzah on the door." He says, "Which door was that?" You know, he wanted to know which one it was, so be able to, you know, because the goy put it up, it's no good, so he wanted to take it down and put it up again, you know, properly. So he asked the goy, "Which room was it?" So he says, "I don't remember. There were like 60 rooms, 60 dorm rooms, and he doesn't remember which one it was." So the question was, now what? Do they have to remove all the 60 mezuzahs and remount them because one of them was put up by a goy, or perhaps there's some heter not? That was the shaila. So, first of all, interestingly enough, it's actually a machlekes a post scheme if a goy is allowed to put up a mezuzah. Some say that a goy to put up a mezuzah is okay. Why? Because the ikar mitzvah is that there should be a mezuzah. It's not the action, not a mitzvah of action that you have to do. It has to be a mezuzah on the door. It doesn't matter who does it, as long as there's a mezuzah there. So some poskim hold, it doesn't really matter if the goy put it up. Others hold, no, it's a puzzle, a mezuzah put up by a goy, because it has to be put up lishma, and a goy can't do that lishma, and therefore it's puzzle. And therefore, since it's a machloikis, it could be that we could use that as a side to say that they don't have to remount the mezuzahs here, because we have what is called in halacha a sfeik sfeika, a double suffik. How so? That each room, take any one of the rooms randomly, okay, take a room in the dorm, that the people in that room can say, well, first of all, who says safik echad, who says that this mezuzah here in our room was the one that fell off? Maybe it wasn't. And even if you want to say that maybe it was this one, maybe the halacha is like the post, maybe it was okay that a goy put it up. So that's called the suffix fix feika, and therefore it's okay. So that would seem to point the fact that they can just leave the situation. However, it's not so simple. So there's a prima gadim in Norachaim Simon Reishain Gimel, Sifkat Yud Gimel, and he says a klal that a sfeik sfeika that one could easily fix is you can't rely on the sfeik sfeika. A sfeik sfeika is like, this is the situation, nothing can do about it. You can rely on the sfeik sfeika. But if it's something you can do, something you can do about it, you can fix it up, so then you can't rely on the sfeik sfeika. So here, again, it has to be easily fixed. So here, truth is, it is could be easily fixed. Why? Because there's 60 rooms, but in each room there's a few boys. So you just make an announcement: every room boy, the boys in each room, they should just, you know, remount the mezuzah. Big deal. Each boy can take care of their room, and therefore you can't rely on the sfeik sfeika. And not only that, Rebbe Yashiv, that's all, he says that it's even easier than that. Why? Because he says he held that if you take the bottom nail out of the mezuzah, that already makes the mezuzah a pasul, because it's hanging. It has to be kavua on the door. So if you take out the bottom nail and then it swings back and forth, not kavua, that's already called as if you took the mezuzah. So really, all they have to do is take off the bottom nail, put it back in, and zero, and then they're good to go. So since that's an easy tikkun, so that's what they should do. He concludes that, interesting, he says, but bichlal, we have to ask, can we, or do we have to believe this goy, that in fact, what he said, the whole story was true? In other words, maybe, even though it's called Messiah Lefitumo, he's just talking, you know, just stum, but it could be that he had kavanas to say, maybe it didn't really happen. But he wanted to, you know, look good in the eyes of the Hanhala and everything. Therefore, and you can see that he wanted to show that the mitzvahs are important to him also. And that, he said, you know, I kissed the mezuzah twice and I put it back. And why do you have to say it like that? Could be that he wanted to show that, but it could. So there's anyways, it's sad that maybe we don't have to believe him. Could be that it's not even true, his whole story. But the bottom line is, again, since it's very easy to fix the situation, remedy it, just tell all the boys, take off the bottom nail, put it back in, he says that that comes out to what everybody should do. Okay. One last story, and with this, the Maisa with Rabbi Shmuel Tzvi Kowalski. The story happened during the year of Avelis for his father. And Rav Kowalski, one day, he came to the big Knesset HaGadol, and he wanted to daven for the Amud, he's a chiyuf, you know, as an avails for his father. So there's many minyanim there in the main shul, and there's one after the other. Now, if you want, since the main shul, there's a lot of chiyuvim, a lot of people want to take the Amud, want to be the shliach tzibur. So what you have to do is, you have to stand there, waiting next to the Amud, when the previous minyan is still going on, so as soon as that's finished, boom, you can chop the amud. Okay, so one day he does that. He was waiting by the previous minyan, and they just, you know, I was waiting for him to finish. And as he's standing there, he noticed there was an old man, very old man, who had just finished davening, and very slowly took off his tallis and his tefillin, you know, very laborly. So finally he finished, and he looked around. He wanted to find somebody that can help him walk home. It was hard for me to lean on somebody, whatever. So he was turning to this person, to that person, but everybody, you know, weekday, everybody's in a big rush, Dobbins quickly runs off, you know. But nobody had time to think. Rav Kowalski's watching this, and his heart went out for him. He goes, I got to help this guy. So he goes up to the old man, goes, here, let me help you. He gives him his arm, and he makes his way, obviously left the Amud, helps this old man home. And he's an old man, he didn't walk so quickly either. So step by step by step, very slowly, laboringly, he walks home, and he helps him. Finally, he gets to his home, and the old man thanked him profusely. Thank you so much for helping me, whatever. But he didn't let it end there. He saw there was a bunch of stairs that led up to the building. So he said, there, let me help you up the staircase also. And he gave him his hand, and a little step by step, slowly but surely, he got him to the top of the stairs, and fine. Completed the mitzvah. And then the whole time, as he was walking with this old man, he was whispering under his breath, Le'ilui Nishmas Avimori, and saying, this should be, at least this should be Ilui Nisham for my father. Okay, I missed the Amud there, but okay. So finally, after that, he runs back to Shul just to catch the last minyan of the morning, and of course he wasn't able to be the Shliach Tzibur because he wasn't waiting there. So he, as it happened, that was the only time during the whole year that he was not didn't act as a Shliach Tzibur. Only tefillah during the whole year that he was not able to be a Shliach Tzibur. However, he recalls that very night after that incident happened, his father came to him in a dream. And he told him, he says, Mochel ani lacha al kol ha-tfilot lifnei amud, ubevat shetitkayem bimkomam keilu mitzvot. He says, I moch on you on all the tfilas that you do for me, on the amud, if you'll do mitzvah such as this. We shall all be zoicha to be mekayme mitzvahs, and in that schus be zoicha to kamei ha-mashiach tzidkeinu bimhir v'yameinu.